This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Houston, this is the SS Salty Rocket. Are we clear for takeoff?
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have liftoff.
The following program is a show intended for an adult audience. Our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
You're with
Poor Andrew the Apprentice.
On Hide and Seek.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. This is your show for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Now, tomorrow is, of course, Anzac Day. And what a lot of people probably don't realise is, we hear a lot about the, back in the 90s and the 2000s, we heard a lot about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that was introduced in the US Army in 1994.
Right.
But 2 years prior to that, the prohibition on LGBTI people in the Australian Army was lifted. So 2 years prior to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell starting, ours was lifted.
It's interesting to see that we were the ones in front of the times here.
Exactly. Now, the DEFCLIS, the Defence Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender and Intersex Information Service.
It's quite a mouthful.
It is quite a mouthful, but I think DEFCLIS is a very military-sounding name.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. It does. And the Melbourne convener of DEFCLIS is Stuart Martin. Good evening, Stuart.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, you're a former lieutenant.
Flight lieutenant.
Flight lieutenant.
Same as a captain in the army, but for the Air Force.
Okay.
But and in Australia, it is lieutenant, not lieutenant.
Yes, that's correct, lieutenant. Only the Americans bastardised that.
But it's still spelt the same, right?
No.
Yes.
It is, but as I said, only Americans bastardised words.
No, they do a lot of that.
So that means you were in the Air Force.
I was indeed, yes.
And so how long were you in the Air Force for?
I was in the Air Force for 6 years.
Okay. And so what does a flight lieutenant do?
It's just a rank. You could have any job as a commissioned officer. So you could be a pilot, a navigator, a nursing officer, a dentist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's just a rank.
And what did you do?
I was a nursing officer.
Okay. Did you still know how to fly planes?
No. But but I did get waltzed around in a flying suit.
Okay.
Well, very much like Tom Cruise does.
Yes. Top Gun, right?
Yes, yeah. Indeed. That was my era. Yes. So, very hot.
Yeah, I can imagine being in the Air Force around a lot of Air Force people would have been quite great for the imagination. Or maybe that's what we think.
That's a good point. The key thing for me was being professional. The other difficult part was in my service, in that whole period of time, it was illegal to be gay in the military.
Right. So you were there before 92?
I was indeed, yeah. I left in 89.
Okay.
And it was one of the reasons why I left. That consistently looking over your shoulder.
Or not looking over your shoulder.
Just being worried about what's going to happen or who finds out or how you share your life. It's very hard to if you're gay and know you're gay, not to live a gay life. And we had military police from all three services who would go out to gay venues and look for gay service personnel.
Wow.
And if you were caught, you could be discharged within 24 hours.
Wow. So it was pretty much march out the door.
Yes. Your feet literally didn't touch the ground.
Yeah. Being a gay man in the military before 92, what did you do? Did you try and get around it? Did you
tell people at all?
I didn't. I came to the belief very quickly that whilst being command of enlisted personnel, that I had the power to, at room inspections for the junior ranks once a week. If the standards of the presentation of the room and the quarters weren't up to standard, they could be confined to barracks. I found it was just complete lie for me to say, you're going to be confined to barracks and not keep your room tidy, but here I am living in a gay lifestyle. How can those two be compatible? They can't. So for me, it was about saying, it's not fair and appropriate for me to be able to live a lifestyle like I could be discharged for one day, but make someone be confined to barracks for having a messy bedroom.
Yeah.
It was that sort of standard, and I didn't want to partake in a double standard. To me, my professionalism and the respect of the rank was really important. It made it difficult.
What made you want to join the Air Force in the first place? Knowing that... did you know you were gay you joined?
Yeah, I did. An opportunity, excitement, bit of a boy zone story, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Not boy zone as in the boy band.
No. Pre-boy zone. Yeah. Pre-take that.
Yep.
When I was growing up in country Western Australia, one of the things I remember doing as a kid was getting my portable radio and wiring up to the clothesline in the back garden. Mm. So I suddenly had this massive big aerial. And we used to have Air Force Mackie jets fly it from Raff Base Pierce up the coastline and doing training exercise, and you could pick up what they were saying.
Right.
Wow.
So it was...
God, if it was that easy for you to get it.
This was a long time ago.
Imagine what terrorists are doing.
Yeah. no hills hoists anymore. Yeah. So it was just that was sort of in my mind as a kid, and just a chance opportunity in later life after finishing nursing to a visit to an Air Force base, and I always thought my eyesight was pretty bad, so I couldn't join the Air Force. But talked to some people. No, they talked to me and said, "Oh no, your eyesight would be fine if you want to be a nursing officer." Okay. So next day,
as long as you're not flying planes, right?
Yeah.
The marvels of contact lenses. So I popped around to the recruitment centre and asked some questions, and they said, "Oh, we'd love to have you." And about 6 to 9 months later, I was in uniform.
Right.
Hide and seek.
Joy 94.9.
James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice with you on your Thursday night. It is 12 minutes past 10. It's like a Friday night for most people.
Well, yes, apart from those who have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to get along to dawn service. Mm. At 6, it starts here in Melbourne.
Will you be there for the dawn service?
Because I'm here, I doubt it. It's your fault I'm missing Anzac Day dawn service.
Yeah, that's all right. We can take that.
That's right. Stuart Martin is our guest. He's a former flight lieutenant. Now, Stuart, you're saying you were in the Army before...
Air Force, sorry.
Before...
put them all into one category.
Oh, that looked good and green.
Defence Force.
Oh, no, the Air Force is blue, right?
Blue, yes.
Oh,
dark blue,
great.
Too. Okay. It's fantastic.
Nice. Would have matched your eyes, right?
Apparently so.
There we go. Would have done wonders. Glint.
So you're in the RAF before 92.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it was very difficult to live a gay life at the time. Mm-hmm. How's that? You left the RAF before 92 though, hadn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So, but from the members you talk to now, what sort of differences are there nowadays?
I've kept in touch with a few friends and more recently with Defcliss. I've gotten to get a better understanding of what it's like. Even in 92 when Paul Keating changed all that and swept away the cobwebs of homophobia and irrationality, it took a long time for military to change its attitude and its views. And to start to look at its values. Even in my time, there were issues about excessive alcohol consumption, misogyny, and they're all sort of words that you still hear today.
Yeah.
But I think I wouldn't use the catchphrase military were drag kicking and screaming into the 21st century. Mm. I think that they have really looked at what does the military do? Why is the military there? Who's it serve? And how does it best reflect Australian society?
It's interesting that, as we're saying at the top of the show, that the prohibition was ended in 92. The US started their Don't Ask, Don't Tell in 94. If we think about where we are today in LGBTI rights and in the equal marriage debate, for example, it would seem a little out of place nowadays that Australia led the way in that area. What led? Do you know what led to that that change in 92?
And who was pioneering it?
Yeah,
I'm not sure the answer to that. It was a decision that Paul Keating made. And at the time, I remember it being quite a courageous decision to make because, from my perspective, it was out of left field. If I knew that was on the horizon, I might have stuck it out a little longer.
Right.
So I don't know why.
A few years later.
Mm. It was. It was a tough gig, and as I said, it remained a tough gig. Just because someone changes the legislation doesn't mean that the values and the beliefs of the organisation changed overnight with it.
No, and I think it's safe to say that they probably didn't.
No, they didn't, certainly not. It took a long time, and even now, you know, we've only been at a march in Mardi Gras in uniform for the last 2 years.
Really?
Yeah, only the last 2 years. Prior to that, we could do unofficial, non-uniform Mardi Gras stuff, and that was around 96, I think, was the very first time. It was G-Force. And that sort of wilted on the vine, and then something else came along, but finally Def Gliss has certainly cemented its place within in the ADF with the support and encouragement of the Chief of Army, Navy and Air Force and the Chief of Defence Force.
So I think, because I feel like there may be a little bit of a difference between, you know, what the services say and what actually happens. Like, were servicemen and women going out to gay bars, maybe, you know, in the later days, to gay bars in uniform or doing things at Mardi Gras, and then the services turning a blind eye, for example?
It's still, well, not, it's okay.
Because when I was in America, I was in New York for Fleet Week, and this was still when, I know, your face is lit up. It was like that.
Hello, Sola.
And it was still when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was in place, but the boys were there in their uniforms in the gay bars, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Still, you know, in the risk that they could be thrown out because they're in a gay bar in uniform, but didn't care. And I remember speaking to them, and they're like, yeah, but, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, everyone knows that we're gay. We just, it's just there, but no one, you know, says anything about it.
Okay. I think in Australia, once Paul Keating said you could be gay in the military, that was the end of the days of witch hunts and you being kicked out in 24 hours notice. So it was a lot easier, but it didn't change or didn't make it easier to be out to your comrades or your superiors or to your subordinates.
Yeah.
And there's a significant difference between what you do socially and what you do in your workplace, in any job. Mm. You have to also remember the Australian military is substantially smaller. The New York Police Force is bigger than the combined ADF.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
Yeah, it says a lot. But we're a different defence force too. We don't live and sleep in our uniform, so to speak. We tend to finish work and go out. An example of that is the two Mardi Gras parades that we've been able to march in uniform in. We are not allowed to go out after the parade in uniform.
Okay,
There are still people in the community and some in defence who would take great joy in seeing someone in a position that would maybe bring defence into poor light with certain parts of the community.
Sure.
Yep.
In the States, Maybe less an issue, but still an issue. Mm-hmm. We are dealing with still a conservative, very much revered organisation. Mm. You look at how Anzac Day is seen in the community, and it is a torchbearer to some conservatives to see that as, okay, well, you know, here we are, two gay men in a gay pub, you know, in a uniform, outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, that, how can they defend our country? They're gay men, you know, they'll just run away screaming because they're queens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All those things come up. None of those are true, but nonetheless, it's something that we need to be aware of and wary of. Although, having said that, Anzac Day, you'll see them in uniform after Anzac Day marches and pubs.
Great.
Hide and seek. Perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
You're on Hide and Seek with James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice. We are in the studio with Stuart Martin, a former member of the Air Force, the Australian Air Force, and the RAF, I guess, and also part of DEFCLIS, the Defence Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender and Intersex Information Service.
And James, we've got a message in on 0427JOY949. Don't forget, you can also email us on air@joy.org.au. And do you want to read that out?
Yeah, I can read it out.
I don't have my reading glasses on.
And I haven't read it yet, but that's okay. Fantastic segment. Such an important issue to highlight, and Stuart is an excellent person to be talking to. You could not have found a more qualified person. It is because of people like Stuart that the work that he has done that allows people like myself to now serve openly and without fear. There you go. And that's from James, not me.
Hi, James. Hopefully your pollies are ironed and you're ready for tomorrow morning's dawn service.
Yeah.
Now, so he's up in Canberra, is he?
Yeah, he's in Canberra. Mm.
Yep.
So they've got the Duke and Duchess there tomorrow, I think.
They do indeed.
Oh, will they be at the dawn service?
I think they may not be at the dawn service. I'd say they'll be at the morning service.
Okay.
But, you know, the one who might have questioned that the Duke's going to be there or not.
No, you never know.
I went to Canberra. I went to uni in Canberra.
You poor
and,
thing.
Well, what I was going to say was that at least at the nightclubs, the Adfa boys had a bit of a reputation.
Ding, ding.
and I suppose that leads to, you used the word misogyny before.
Yep.
And that's a reputation that the Defence Force, males in the Defence Force, have got. Do you think it's just boys being boys, or what is that?
To some extent, perhaps it is. But I still also think it's partly just a very conservative organisation. For a long time, women in the ADF were only allowed to do certain jobs. And that's changed in the last year or so, 18 months. Now, every job in the ADF is open to a female, as long as that female, or the, as it should be rightly put, as long as the individual can perform the physical tasks of the job, mm-hmm. Had the capacity and the capability to do it, then they're able to do it. Mm-hmm. We've had jet fighter pilots in the Air Force for a long time, and the Israeli Army has had serving female soldiers since the 1950s.
Yeah.
So it's partly that, I think. But I still think it sits down to an organisation that has been very conservative and macho. You know, I wouldn't say a lot of machismo, but it's a macho organisation. And if you're a female, you know, this is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of that issue, I think.
On the topic of macho-ness and misogyny, I think the Navy had a reputation for a long time of being quite misogynist, especially with their initiation kind of things that goes on. I remember seeing it on television when I was a kid. The Air Force doesn't have a reputation so much like for that, right?
I think that the issue why that's borne out maybe more so in the Navy is because you're in, you know, especially at sea, you're living in very close quarters, and that makes it difficult. And there's less females than there are males, just by sheer weight of numbers. So in some ways, they might be seen as being a little bit more special because they get a slightly different setup in their quarters. Whereas land-based service, you basically go back to your room at night, or you go home, you don't live on the base. Whereas at sea, you're there 24/7. That's
like Big Brother.
It is. So, and then you suddenly, for years, having male only, and all of a sudden you bring in females. Mm-hmm. And that was a big change in the Navy, a very big change. Like in most organisations, if you've gone from having no one, you know, I suppose the best way to equate is if you had an all-boys school and then you decided in term three you're going to introduce girls.
Yeah.
How do you then change the culture and the understanding of an organisation? It doesn't happen overnight. It has happened and it continues to happen. And it still needs a lot more work to be done, but it is a much better place now than it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or even 50 years ago.
Yeah.
There were gay men and lesbians in the military then, as there are now. There were, you know, these sort of issues existed then. It's just fortunate we have senior command who see the importance of having the right person in the job, and that shouldn't be based on your sexuality. It should be based on your inherent capacity to do the job, your skill, your ability, and your intellect, not who you sleep with. And they recognise that.
We've got a couple more texts in.
Right.
James has said that his pollies are ironed and ready. So there you go.
Good,
and
James.
The Duke and Duchess won't be at the dawn service, but they are going to the march. So that's good. And also, Chris has texted in saying, loving the show. Thanks, Chris. Similar story to James. Stuart is a fantastic bloke and got me to Sydney for Mardi Gras. Winky face. You know what happened there. I really hope that the ADF can spread its LGBT efforts towards the ADF cadets aged between 13 and 20, where support systems aren't as mature yet. Can you shed some light on that?
Hi, Chris. Hope you survived up in Brisbane and you found your car in the car park, by the way. To talk about Air Force cadets and Army cadets and Navy cadets, that's a very difficult area because what we're inherently dealing with is young people from 13 onwards.
Yeah.
It's a difficult environment to work with in the first place. And, you know, the military has a duty of care to ensure that young people are provided with the best care and support and advice that they can. You know, I work for university now, and we have underage students, and there's, you know, pretty strict legislation around who can work with students at below an age of 18. Mm-hmm. And I think you need to have the confidence of the parents and also the young people who wish to join something like the cadets. It's a difficult area to work in because you need to maintain that confidence and to support everyone who comes onto that organisation, be they gay or straight or bisexual or transgendered. But how you do that job is the really difficult part. And the reality is the vast majority of staff who provide the training and support to cadets are volunteers.
Yeah.
Most of them have never been in the military before either. Like any youth organisation, they get involved from their children's involvement. So it's difficult, and there's that perception that still, unfortunately, that's ill-founded in the community, that gay and lesbian men are only interested in having sex, and there's these 15 and 16 year olds, it's all about having sex. It's not, but that's a perception out there. So it's something that really does need to be worked on. It's a difficult area to work in, and it's going to take a lot of hard work and perseverance. And I don't think it's unfortunately in the ADF's position. I can't talk for the ADF officially because I'm not in the ADF, but I think they have other things they have to address first. But it certainly needs support and needs to be addressed. How you do that? That's part of the question, the answer to the question, I think.
And I suppose that's probably a good point. We haven't actually raised what DefGLIS does, and I'm taking it part of the role is what you're talking about there with the cadets is providing the support and support to the trainers. Mm.
The DefGLIS hasn't done a lot in relation to cadets. There are certainly some members who are involved in the cadets as staff instructors. DefGLIS has only just been incorporated in the last 2 weeks, I think. Well done, Vince, by the way. So we're still working at being the change agent within the ADF.
Yep.
Just to mention someone like Kate McGregor, who is a transgendered lieutenant colonel in the Army, who transitioned to a female.
That was still a few years ago, right?
It's been current in the last 2 years. And
right.
It was a Australian story story about her about 3 months ago.
Yep.
All right.
And that took a lot of guts. And that was something that's really out there, you know, for the general community. But here's someone who's a highly regarded, highly skilled and qualified ADF officer who makes a transition. So basically, for everyone else's intents and purposes, Friday goes home as a male lieutenant colonel. Monday morning walks in female lieutenant colonel.
Yeah.
That's what everyone else sees. But for her, there was this huge transition, huge uplifting part of her life, major change. But that's what people see. So DefGLIS's job is to be a support for GLBTI people to work as a change agent with Defence and the ADF. So it's a job that sort of you need to be able to do both things at the one time. You know, you need to educate and inform. You need to also support. It's difficult if you feel like you're the one person in your platoon or in your section who's gay and you're 18 or 19 years old. How do you cope with that?
So is it a case of that? A guy in his 19 year old, mm-hmm. he's in the army, and he comes out. Is it your role to go in, speak with his commanding officers, and sort of talk to them? Is that how it works? Or?
No, not at the moment. My understanding is it's more of a support service that firstly, DefGLIS is out there. And, you know, Mardi Gras parades are a great way of publicising within Defence and ADF that we're here and we're proud and we're just like anyone else.
Yep.
So you conquer that divide of am I the only gay in the village scenario, to paraphrase a comedian's point of view. So immediately you know you're not the only one, and then you know that there is somewhere to go. If you decide to be out, you don't have to be out, but if you decide to be out, there is someone a click away on the internet who's in the ADF who you can contact, talk, get advice and support, particularly about, do I want to come out? How would I do it? What's the best way? Is there someone else on the base who I can come and talk to who's involved in DefGLIS already? Or things have gone pear shape. You know, and I'm getting hassled by some of my other platoon members or by an NCO. What do I do? So it's that sort of support. It's not someone sticks a hand up in little, say three rah in some little platoon and goes, oh, I'm out, and suddenly we swoop in. Doesn't happen.
And coat them with feather dust and make sure everything's okay.
But it's a case of if they can contact the members of DefGLIS and talk.
They can, yep. So there's a great website. We have a Facebook presence as well. Mm-hmm. So, it's easy to make contact. We can also provide and give them links to mental health organisations that can assist them. And so it's also an ally network, so there are public servants who work in defence involved as well. So it's someone to be there. I can remember when I decided to come out, and we all, I think, had very similar feelings, you know, and worries. Am I the only gay person here?
Yeah.
Who? What's going to happen? What happens if I tell someone? And you sort of think, well, if I tell one person, that's it. But no, you spend the rest of your life telling everyone that you're gay.
Yeah.
But it's just, how do you do that for the first time? You might have done it at, you know, 15 or 16, but you may have never told anyone, and suddenly you're in the military.
Yeah. You are on Hide and Seek with James Finlay and Andrew the Apprentice.
And we have Stuart in the studio from Defqlis. Now, Stuart, you came in and you've got your jacket on there because it's probably cold here in Melbourne. Mm. You have a very special pin.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Great little pin.
Can you describe the pin firstly and tell us what it's about?
It's a the rising sun in the centre of the pin, which is the Army's emblem.
The one that goes on the side of the slouch hat.
Yes, yep. Indeed. And surrounded by, almost haloed by the gay and lesbian colours. And it's quite a remarkable story. The Chief of Army decided off his own bat to produce a pride pin.
Wow.
And didn't come to us and say, by the way, hey guys, this is what I'm going to do. It was, I'm going to do it. It's the right thing. We should do it. And did it and produced, I think, 1,000 pride pins. And I said, some lucky people get cufflinks to go with it. And I've got those. That's pretty specko. And Vince was telling me that he was getting these media inquiries about how do we get this pin? Have you heard about this pin? And he's going, no, I haven't heard a thing. So he had to hastily rush to find out what was going on. And that's where it came out that our Chief of Army had decided. And that's an indication of how much.
And this is only recent.
Only recent in the last 18 months, I think. How much the organisation has changed. An army has spent a lot of time talking about what the right sort of values that army wants, and if you don't fit in those values, then it's time you leave. So that was basically putting his mouth, you know, saying, hey, this is what I believe, this is what I should do, this is what we will do approach. And he took it one step further. The army can it's set times in the year, depending on what the event is, they can wear an addition to their uniform. And Chief of Army said that if you had a pride pin, you could wear it on the week preceding Mardi Gras.
Wow.
In your uniform.
Gosh, which, that's cool.
Military is very, very tight about what you wear and how you wear it and why you wear it and when you can wear it.
And you got the Chief of the Army saying yes. Wear a pride pin.
Yes.
Now, it's funny that you bring out the bring up the Chief of the Army because Matt from Thornbury has texted in on 0427 join 949 and he says whilst there seems to be a desire to change at the very top, how do you change the defence old school who have been there a long time and are now in senior positions of influence?
Okay, I think that's about regeneration of any organisation. You look at anything, any organisation around, small or large, there is a certain aspect of regeneration. Mm. I think defence is always pride on trying to project and represent the community. And that's meaning it means it should be ethnically diverse, it should reflect the political and social values of the country it supports. So that's partly about attracting people. I think younger people who are coming in the military have a different attitude, which is very similar to younger people outside in society. When it comes to command and rank, the one thing that the military does very well is you have to follow orders. Mm. If you can't follow an order that is, you know, mandated and required, then you'll strike many, many barriers. So if you're a middle level major or a lieutenant colonel or whatever in the Navy, in the Air Force, and you're seen to not be following the orders, then you'll find yourself in hot water at some point. It's just like any organisation, you can't be a loose cannon. And the military are very, very strong about this is where, who we are, this is what we do, this is how we do it. In everything they do, they had their own masses of regulations that must be followed, down to your haircut, how you wear your clothing. So if you've got someone who isn't prepared to toe the line, like Chief of Army said, then it's time you moved on.
Wow. And we've just had a tweeting note from Defglis, and they're saying that the Army, of course, also added respect to their value system and put it at number one.
Yes, and I think that's a big change. The difficulty, I think, as you pointed out, is to get that from being a written value to being a lived and believed and cherished value. And that's the hard part, to answer the question from the chap from Thornbury.
And it's what I find really interesting is that, I mean, I work in the health space, health promotion space in my day job, and it is the case that we talk about knowledge, attitudes and behaviour. And you can change one thing and the others don't necessarily follow, but it's very interesting that this seems to be a case of behaviour has been forced to be changed, and then attitudes and is coming, and it's come a long way.
I think military, because of its nature, you can force a change in behaviour.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't follow command and you don't follow orders, things happen. Bad things will happen to you. Mm. And at some point you'll go, well, you know, if I don't buck the line, I'm out. And that's in everything you do. So it's one of those organisations where you can do that. And the police force isn't a similar organisation, perhaps. Having said that, it does take time.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we all love it to be an instantaneous thing, it's better for someone to respect you and respect your rank than just to blindly follow you because you hold a rank senior to them. The trick is, as an officer is to, or a senior NCO is to earn that respect. Mm. Earned respect is far more powerful than respect conferred just because you hold a rank. And the same about values. You have to live those values, you have to lead those values, you have to believe those values. And that takes time. And it must be led from the top.
Mm. Stuart, if there is a gay or lesbian current or former Defence Force personnel out there, how do they get in touch with you guys?
Good lead-in. They can jump onto the following website. Yeah. So it's defglis.com.au. defglis.com.au, and from there you'll be able to read and see what we do, and also if you put Defglis into Facebook, it'll come up, and then you can make contact with us, and then one of the things will happen.
And I take it, as you were saying before, obviously it's a support for current members to get in contact, but I'm assuming that former members of the forces can act as you do, as mentors.
Yep. Well, you can take part as just involved socially.
Yep.
The one thing that people don't realise is when you join a closed organisation like police or ADF, you have a very strong sense of identity. And even when you leave, that identity still follows you. It might diminish, but it's always there. But when you do leave, it's like having your arms chopped off. You lose a lot of your identity. So Defglis is recognising the importance of helping you maintain some of that, to take part in the social aspects that still exist. And that's important.
Yeah, great.
Stuart Madden from Defglis, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And a big thank you to everyone else listening, and all the best for tomorrow, no matter what you're doing and where you're observing Anzac Day.
Yeah, I suppose my closing statement would be in relation to Anzac Day. I think it's important to remember that Anzac Day isn't just about those who served at Gallipoli. It's for those, everyone who served in any theatre of war. Just remember what you risk when you join the military and the fact that it could be the end of your life. It's a big commitment. And it's just what any return service person is asking for is respect and regard. Again, it's earned. If you can get that from the community, that would be great.
Yeah.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.